there. Welcome to Leading Change Conversations, the podcast where we tackle real-life challenges with leaders like you to make organizational change a breeze. In this episode, we will discuss how leaders can effectively manage their own anxiety about change while maintaining a positive outlook and motivating their teams. I'm Ulrike Seminati, and I train, coach, and inspire leaders to turn into successful change agents, to communicate with impact, and to lead with authenticity. So now let me introduce you to our amazing guest of today, Jennifer Hill. Jennifer K. Hill is an evolutionary leader, entrepreneur, author, speaker, podcaster, and TV host. She has hosted popular shows with Dr. Deepak Chopra, Bruce Lipton, and many other leaders from around the world on her Regarding Consciousness podcast. After exiting her first company in 2018, she recently co-founded a new company in the technology space, OptiMatch, that utilizes their proprietary algorithm and built-in AI to match people in business. Welcome, Jennifer.
Hi, Ulrike. It's such a pleasure to be here with you and your audience.
Yes, it's great to have you here and your expertise, because we will look today really into this whole part of being resilient in change, managing the own anxiety, because the majority of the world's population statistically does not like change or shows great resistance towards it. And many people even fear it. It's a stressful situation. So right away, first question, what do you think? How can leaders motivate their teams when they feel this anxiety inside of themselves? Well, they have the feeling, well, but I have to bring the others on board. I have to convince them that a change is something great, or at least worth the exercise. But how can I do this if inside of myself, I just feel the exact opposite?
It's a great question, Ulrike, and I'll tie it into Google's Aristotle project. Google studied many, many teams. I think there were over 38,000 participants in the Aristotle project. And what they found, had teams be the most successful they could potentially be, was psychological safety. And that's what I learned too when I went through our acquisition process in 2018. We were a tiny little boutique company, 5 to 10 employees, and got acquired by a subsidiary of a 3,000 person company. So needless to say, the team was not rather excited to go from this little office where we could all kind of do what we want to being part of this huge corporate conglomerate. So one of the things that I learned is that in order to facilitate change as a leader, number one, we have an opportunity to do work on ourselves. I saw this in the 15 years that I spent in the recruiting industry. Whoever the leader is of an organization has a trickle-down effect on everybody else. So if I'm angry, stressed, anxious, resentful, bitter, whether or not I ever physically say anything to my team, they're going to feel it energetically, emotionally, and that's going to cause them dis-ease and distress. So part number one to this is the leader themselves has the opportunity to cultivate greater connection to themselves, because that's where psychological safety starts. Psychological safety means to be able to be yourself in any situation and be accepted. And they were actually very surprised by this in Google's Aristotle project. They thought that perhaps it would be socioeconomic status, who lived by each other, who was the same generation age-wise, though it really had nothing to do with that. In any given social situation, Ulrike, what matters most is how psychologically safe do I feel with you. And that's what we've been studying for the last 2 to 3 years now at OptiMatch, the company I'm the CEO of, is motivating factors. So whether you use any sort of motivating factor test or assessment, I encourage all of us leaders out there to listen deeply first to ourselves and then to our team members, and understand that nobody is misbehaving. We're all motivated differently. And if we can speak into one another's motivations, that will create greater psychological safety, productivity, and effectiveness.
Yeah, I see that too. That's exactly what I'm working with leaders on as well. It is about finding, I call it your point of departure towards a goal, using that analogy with a map or Google Maps or GPS system, whatever other GPS system you can have. But the idea is that you really understand what is your point of departure. Because I think people see the goal, we easily see the goal. The goal is told to us by our hierarchy very often. And then we are expected to embrace that goal right away. because the reasons rationally make sense, but nobody really cares if they emotionally make sense to the individual. And that is, like you say, the role of ourselves. Only we can help ourselves with that, really, especially if we are the leader and others are looking at us, how we react now to this, for example, a new announcement. And then actually, when we are clear, I think about what is our position towards that goal? Why do I fear that goal potentially? Why do I resist in a certain way? Why do I do not want to do that? And then maybe reflecting on, okay, but what could be in it for me? That is maybe not in the goal directly, but in secondary effects around that, or something that might happen once it's materialized afterwards, or on the journey towards it. So really thinking a bit out of the box when you think about this project that actually is creating this anxiety. Do you think that too? Is this kind of analysis what you would also recommend?
Yeah, I think that we can also get analysis paralysis, and it can sometimes cripple us. And my invitation to all of us would be to reflect when we're going through a change on what matters to us. There's what I like to call the golden triangle, which is connection to ourselves, connection to others, and connections to our purpose. If the context is that we're doing something for a greater good, it's part of our mission, it's part of our purpose, then everything else emerges out of that golden triangle. And so my invitation would be, it's easy to get an analytical and try to figure things out. Though when we connect to our why, to what matters to ourselves, even to ask ourselves that question, Ulrike, every day, what matters to me? And then pause certain times during the day and reflect, get off your phone, get off your computer, spend a little bit of time in silence and reflection. And what I've noticed in the CEOs I coach with and work and in the studies we've been doing with OptiMatch is that we don't give ourselves permission to be. And the greatest leaders I've ever met, Ulrike, are leaders who embody everything that they ask of their team. And I think that that requires a certain amount of reflection every day. There's a technique I love that I use every single day before I go to sleep. And what I do, I learned it from one of my Kabbalistic teachers. I study a variety of spiritual modalities and disciplines, meditation, among other things. And one of the things my teacher taught me years ago is before we go to bed, reflect every night. How could I have lived today better? Was I rude to a team member? Did I brush them off? Did I not give a clear context in a meeting? What am I proud of myself for? Did I not blow up in a meeting where nobody else might ever know that I was fuming inside and ready to be punitive with the team member, but I kept my cool, I regulated my emotions, and I kept it together? And the third thing is, what are three things that I appreciated about my day? And by taking this repose before we go to sleep and reflective time, I find it helps us each and every day to become better leaders, to be more adaptable to change. And to your point, businesses are not meant to adapt and work within change and to emerge from change. They're meant to weather it. You know, we saw this happen during COVID. Is there a systems and structures to mitigate change, to be sure not too much change happens, otherwise it gets uncomfortable? And so our invitation to all of us is the next level of change is, what is it like if we, just like the butterfly, before it becomes a butterfly, it's a caterpillar, and it literally liquefies. I don't know if you've heard this, Ulrike, but when the caterpillar is in the cocoon, its imaginal cells, literally you have butterfly soup in there, that nothing that existed before exists now in this cocoon. And then when it emerges, it's completely transformed. And I think that's what's being required of us, not just as leaders, but as organizations, institutions, and the world right now, is this liquefaction of who we knew ourselves to be and the rebuilding of something entirely new.
It sounds like a very radical change, a very deep change at least. And I can imagine for many people, it's like, oh my God, this is a total overwhelm for me. Because I mean, obviously what you hear certainly as well when you work with people, nobody has time. Yeah, it's always the same excuse. I don't have time. And it's hard to get into the mind of people that actually this work on yourself will save you time at the end. Yeah, because you waste a lot because you're not very clear on what is going on inside of you. And because you're not very clear on your position towards a goal, for example, and you You're kind of victim of your anxiety without realizing it because you are an autopilot all day long. And like you say, reflecting in the evening, I think that's a very good thing to get out of the autopilot and make certain things conscious and being aware of what was going on today, actually. Because it's so stressful usually that people just run from one meeting to the next, never have the time to pause, never take also even 30 seconds to pause in between. And I think there is also the big, I would nearly call it sickness of the business today. And it has even accelerated since COVID because so many people work online. And then you don't even have that break anymore when you walk from one meeting room to the next because you're sitting in front of your meeting room, in front of your computer, and it's just one after another. And people just don't breathe in between anymore. So I think, I think it's a scary thing to understand. Oh, my God. It's a huge change also in myself. How can I tackle that? What would you say if somebody, if you speak to people about that and you have that kind of reaction where somebody says, whoa, that's too much for me. What would you tell them first, you know, to overcome this first threshold of, well, I don't want to go there. I better procrastinate for a while until it's absolutely necessary.
I think the first thing, Ulrike, that I've learned that I've taught myself and now I extend to others is compassion. Is rather than making the person wrong for having the resistance, is understanding that they are doing the best they can in every moment, and so are we. It was one of the deepest pieces of wisdom I've had in the last several years that I got during a meditative state. And I share this to say that number one is to have compassion. Number two is to acknowledge how they're feeling. Because if you're my client and you're a CEO, or if you're a CEO talking to one of your team members, if I go straight into, let's fix it, you know, as leaders, that's the old patriarchal top-down phenomenon that is being basically made obsolete in business. It's not going to be the modality that we're going to see that businesses are run from. We're already starting to see an emergence of a new type of leadership, daring leadership, that requires a different sort of level of emotional intelligence and EQ, for lack of a better word. So as I said, step one, compassion. Step two, acknowledge where they're at. Step three, ask permission and just say, hey, I get it. I completely understand. I can't imagine what this is like for you right now. And to actually call out how you feel the person might be feeling. You're angry right now. You're anxious right now. You could either do it one of two ways. You really have to have an opportunity to guide who the person is and how they respond better to it. For somebody who's a little bit more soft-spoken and softer, they might need to be nudged a little bit. If they're feeling just really anxious, then you might not want to say, you're anxious. You might want to say, wow, it sounds like you're feeling really anxious about this. Versus if it's more of the type A CEO person who's like, I'm anxious. I have this board meeting. I have to do it. So then you would go to them, you're anxious right now. And so really meeting people where they're at, which goes back to understanding how people are motivated, then asking permission. You're anxious right now. I get that. Do you have the space for me to share something? There's something I think that could help you regulate your nervous system and help you to really calm down and get out of your fight or flight brain and into your higher brain functioning. Would that help? And so I always start with a place of curiosity rather than just assuming whatever method I'm about to provide is going to be the right one. I literally have over 100 tools I use at any given time with my clients, on myself. I was actually just reviewing the 168 tools I have today to be sure I was actually using all of them in my own life. So compassion, checking in, seeing, you know, calling out where they're emotionally at, inviting and asking permission. And then the final step, one of my favorite go-to steps that I use with a lot of executives and teams is heart-focused breathing by HeartMath. Changed my life. I had the honor of hosting a TV show with them a few years ago during COVID on nurses, firefighters, first responders, right during the peak of it all. And what's really extraordinary is they've been studying for 40 years, since the 1990s, heart-brain coherence. And what we found is, from a physiological standpoint, when we allow slow, deep breaths in and out through the center of our heart, and we do this breathing in. I teach executives to do this before meetings, when they wake up in the morning, just for 30 seconds to a minute. You imagine the breath with your, even you could do this with your eyes open. If you're in the car listening to this podcast right now, you don't have to close your eyes, which is why I love it as a tool. You can do it real time while you're having a tough conversation with your employee, with the board, with a family member. So you focus your attention in the area of the heart or chest. And imagine that your breath is flowing in and out, right through the center of your heart or chest, breathing a little slower and a little deeper than usual, finding an easy rhythm that works for you. And you might breathe into the count of five and out to the count of five. There are many wonderful breathing techniques. This just happens to be my go-to, and I love that it's scientifically validated. And what happens is when we do this, we're actually changing our HRV. For anybody out there who has a Whoop, Apple Watch, Oura Ring, you can see it's monitored on there, your HRV. This relates to your longevity. This relates to your DHEA, which is the immortality hormone. It helps us reduce cortisol, which is going to decrease our lifespan and increase our stress, and to create more DHEA and put us into what they call a more coherent physiological state, which means our heart and our brain are more coherent. So it's one of my favorite tools. Pretty much any time I work with coaching client, I always utilize heart-focused breathing at some point during the work that we do together. And then I use a multitude of other things, but it's knowing being a great leader is having wonderful tools in your toolbox. I like to say, here's my little joke, Ulrike, it's like Batman. Most of us listening, if you're in the, you know, Western culture, you might have heard of Batman. He's a famous superhero. Though, as I like to share, Batman is one of the only superheroes who is not superhuman. He's not like Superman, not like Spider-Man. He didn't get like bit by a, you know, whatever it was, a spider. What makes him a superhero is a super tool belt. So if he finds himself falling off the edge of a cliff or a building or meeting with an adversary, he just uses one of his tools. And that's my intention for any leader I work with, is to help them to be the CEOs of their own lives and to be able to have this arsenal of tools in their tool belt. So whenever you get triggered, boom, you can go to one of your top 10 tools. I even encourage people to write your tools down. I call it a resilience tool list, and have that tool list written down on one of the clients I just hung up with, a CEO. He said, Jen, I have one of the things you told me on my laptop, so I never forget it when I'm in the middle of an upset.
I think breath is anyway one of these functions in our body that we totally underestimate, because it's for free. It's always there. It's also the only automatical function that we can steer. It's not like our digestion, for example, or our heart rate. We cannot steer it directly, only indirectly via the breathing. So I think it's a fantastic thing, and we forget so quickly about it. We live all the time in a body-mind connection, but most of the time we're not at all aware of that. Or many people have never actually been really aware of that. And I think we totally underestimate how we can help ourselves with our body when we feel stress and anxiety, instead of immediately trying to change our mindset, to think differently. That's so much harder than just breathing for a while, for example, or sitting in a different position. You know, when people are sad or feeling unsafe, for example, they change their sitting position or the standing position. Obviously, the body expresses the emotions that we have. But the other way around, it works as well. I mean, you can strengthen yourself just by changing your position. And checking that out is maybe also part of your toolbox. What do you think of that?
I love it. It's so funny you bring that up, Ulrike, because one of the tools in the 180 tools that I have written down is something I learned in a personal development class years ago, and it's called the jellyfish. So if those of you are listening and can't see, I've connected my two wrists together. My hands are facing upwards and I'm wiggling my fingers. So somebody taught me this and they said, you can't argue with another person while doing this, because physiologically, most of us, 99.99% of us, have never held our body in this position. And there's something where we have structural memory. So for those of us, when we get angry, upset, anxious, to Ulrike's point, we hold our body in a particular sort of position. So whether it's the jellyfish, which I'm demonstrating on the video, or any other sort of thing, I used to teach this to job seekers when I was running the recruiting company, anything you can do to physiologically change your body actually gives you access to new ways of thinking, speaking, being, and acting, because you're changing the structure of your body, which is then connected to your brain.
What would be another one which you could share with the audience when it comes to quick anxiety reduction, I would say? Let's imagine the situation. Sure. You get the announcement And you feel like, oh my God, maybe I have to lay off half of my team. I don't know. Maybe I will even lose my job. This kind of anxiety where it's really very overwhelming immediately. And then suddenly you're expected, let's say it's happening in a town hall. You hear it as a reader, as a leader at the same time as your team. But obviously, you know, already at the end of the town hall, your whole team will come and ask questions, which you probably can't answer because you're so much in your anxiety. That's the situation. What could people do?
Well, there are two situations. If you're online, one of my favorite techniques to do that you can do below the camera line is to cross one hand over the other. It's a way to connect the right and left hemispheres of your brain. So I'm crossing my right hand on top of my left. I'm connecting my fingers, and then I'm rolling my hands towards myself. You can drop, if you're watching this video, I highly recommend looking at it. It's one of the most life-changing techniques I've ever learned. You drop your hands then, I didn't come up with it, below the camera line. Notice nobody can even see that my hands are in this position. You'll notice, Ulrika, that you automatically feel calmer. It calms the nervous system. So a variation of this is taught to autistic people and people on the spectrum, where you can grab one ear or the other, just crossing, reconnecting the right and left hemispheres of the brain can be a really quick, easy way to do that. And if you're in the middle of a meeting, because I know that's a little bit different, say you're physically in person and you can't necessarily cross one hand over the other right in front of your whole team, then another thing that you could do is just any sort of hand posture or thing that you've never physiologically done with your body that wouldn't look particularly weird to your team members. So you could even just touch the tips of your index fingers and just kind of keep them like this, do some sort of position. Any sort of body position structurally that you've never normally done with yourself physiologically is going to give you a calming effect and access to different emotions than you might otherwise have.
Interesting. I've never heard of that one, actually. Why is that? Because the brain has to do a new connection in this very moment and is kind of occupied with something else. Is that the reason?
I would be willing to. I'm not a neuroscientist. I can refer you to some of the top neuroscientists in the world. This is something I learned, this original technique, not the hand crossing one, but the one about jellyfish or moving your hands in a new position. I probably learned that 12 or 13 years ago from an organization that had been studying this for years. And to your point, Ulrike, I would be willing to bet it has to do with anything we've never done before. You're creating new neuron pathways. It's all about neuroplasticity. If you look at, you know, leading science now tells us we're constantly creating new neuron pathways all the time, where modern science 10, 15, 20 years ago told us that our brains stopped evolving at age 20 or whatever it was that they used to tell us. So now we know that's no longer true and that we're actually constantly evolving as human beings. Get tools. That's my best recommendation to leaders. I could refer you to many, many, many different tools out there, great people, great resources. That's my favorite thing is tools. And another big thing I work with executives on is inner child work. Have you ever heard of this, Ulrike?
Yes, I heard of this, yeah. But I don't think that the audience has.
Oh, it's amazing. I had never heard of it myself up until about 7 years ago. So it was just a year or two before I sold my company that I learned about it. Oh my gosh. So it's so easy and simple. There's lots of videos you can find out there on my YouTube site at Jennifer K. Hill. I think I have a complimentary inner child one that I did for a mastermind I lead. And what you do is you put your right hand on your heart and your left hand on your abdomen, or you could do one or the other, and you start to breathe a little slower and you envision a version of yourself at a different age. Now, some of my clients like to look at a picture of themselves at a certain age to start. Some of them like to imagine themselves at any age. You could be 3, 5. One of my clients is working with somebody who's 13 that he wanted to reconnect with. And then you connect with yourself and you introduce yourself and you say, "Hi, I'm Jennifer. I'm Ulrike. What's your name? How do you want me to call you?" And some people want to be called buddy or sweetheart or whatever name they want to be called. And you acknowledge them. And in some cases, Ulrike, this is where it can help to work with an expert, but there's lots of great videos on YouTube and so forth how to do this. Sometimes your inner child might not talk to you because we've neglected them for so long. One of my dear friends who taught me this technique 7 years ago, her inner child was hiding behind a tree for the first 30 days she tried to talk to her because she was so afraid. And after coming out, you know, she's now in the relationship of her dreams, wildly successful businesswoman. And so it may seem counterintuitive. I was just literally teaching this recently at a keynote I was giving to people who run law firms. It is amazing because when we as leaders When we attend to our own psycho-spiritual emotional needs, then we're no longer reacting to one another. What most people don't realize is if you have an upset employee or if you yourself are upset, you're not dealing with an upset 40-year-old, 50-year-old, 35-year-old. You are dealing with an upset 5-year-old. And so if I do this every day. At the end of my morning meditation, I check in, sweetheart, how are you feeling? I find out what I need. And sometimes I'm surprised because I'm very logical. And I also got diagnosed being on the spectrum a few years ago. So I'm not always in tune with my emotions. And I'll say, how are you feeling, sweetheart? And she'll just start crying. She'll be like, I'm so sad about blah, blah, blah. I'm like, oh my God, 43-year-old me, Ulrika, had no idea I was sad, angry, frustrated, upset. Though when I take the time to address those emotions that are more below the surface, then I don't get my crap on everybody else. Because otherwise, if I forget to check in, it's almost embarrassing. Sometimes 2 p.m. will roll around. It'll be a travel day where for whatever reason, I forgot to check in with her. And I will have a tantrum as a 43-year-old. And all of a sudden, in that moment, I'll have the emotional wherewithal to be like, oh, sweetheart, is that you? Are you okay? You don't love me. Nobody likes me. But this is what we're all dealing with in our romantic relationships, professionally, personally. If we can all attend to our own emotional needs, then we're going to stop dumping our baggage on everybody else.
And we don't realize it because we're working in autopilot all day.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I think this is a distinction to make, to be just much more aware of where we are and what we feel emotionally and what is behind this, let's say, overreaction, because we have a lot of overreaction, which are also steered by our biological setups, because the human brain is still the same as 10,000 years ago, even though the dangers are not at all the same as 10,000 years ago. But we have these same very strong reactions you mentioned before, fight and flight mode, which we have in situations where we just feel threatened by whatever, by something that is maybe relatively harmless. But still, we have quite a big overreaction. And I like the idea of starting your day with that. I will try that out, actually. I have worked with it in a bit of different setup, rather in a systemic way of coaching people, working also with these inner elements that people have, you know, and making a constellation out of that so that they can really have this inner dialogue with their fears as well, which is very, very specific, very special, very strong. a story of its own, actually. But I think it's important to just have the courage to connect with yourself. I realize that many people shy away from that as if it's something that might be dangerous, or where they feel like, oh, I might not be able to handle it afterwards, because they imagine that something's wrong with them. And I think this is the first thing to get out of our minds, because that's not the case, obviously. It's really a gift which you can give to yourself, to connect to yourself in a different way. And then you can manage your anxieties much, much better, because you get this awareness that actually there's no reason really for anxiety. And you get much more relaxed also in the present moment, yeah, that you just connect with what is now. And then you take it from there and you let things come and you manage your emotions because you're more aware. And this all creates a beautiful package, actually. Yeah, thank you very much, Jennifer. Where can people find you, learn more from you, get in touch with you?
Yeah, thank you. So the two best places to find me are my name, Jennifer, K as in kite, Hill, HILL.com. That's my personal website if you want information on speaking, coaching, anything of that nature. And if you want to learn more about how you match with your teams, you can get a free report at OM, O as in open, M as in Mary, .app. So OM.app is our OptiMatch site. Go ahead and sign up there, and then we can give you information on how to get your free OM.app OptiMatch report.
Yeah, thank you very much for all these insights. And to the audience, thanks for tuning into Leading Change Conversations once more. So if you want to improve your own skills on leading change or communicating more effectively, you can also check out my courses for individuals on my website. You can find there are a bunch of useful 90-minute sessions on overcoming procrastination, influencing through presence, communicating with impact, or surmounting change resistance, for example. So until next time, keep leading, keep learning, and making a difference.